Home, I would have said to my son good night about 6 hours ago. So if I fall asleep, do make sure you wake me up. So here's a plan of talk. As the title of the talk, the lecture says, this is a primarily a classical field theory course where the Lagrangian in question is something funny. This is not a Lagrangian you would see in a textbook of field theory. It's something that's supposed to describe so-called unstable D-brain, mostly in type 2B and type 2A theory. And the purpose of this talk will be really doing classical field theory of this particular Lagrangian. I believe Ashok will have several courses later in this school where he will probably put all of this in more stringy context. So I'll try to sort of minimize stringy aspect of this, but rather concentrate on classical physics of this funny field theory. So plan of three lectures will go like this, will be adjusted depending on how it comes about. Today, I'll start with some toy model. It should be very insulting toy model for you guys, but I'll start there anyway. And introduce general form of this effective action, which is supposed to come out of type 2B theory. And in particular, I'd like to concentrate on this unstable D2 brain, this 2 plus 1 dimensional world volume case. And tomorrow, I will do more of serious computation. And I set everything up in terms of Hamiltonian formulation instead of doing usual Euler-Lagrange equation of motion. And there is a dual formulation where although in the original field theory, the Lagrangian is very funny because on shell, the Lagrangian itself vanishes completely. Turns out there is a dual formulation where you actually have non-vanishing Lagrangian and classically completely equivalent to the starting point. And at the end of today, hopefully I will get to this very interesting object, which is a Nambu-Goto flux string. Flux in question refers to electric field on your world volume. And on Wednesday, I'll do more of dynamics of this, starting from this Hamiltonian viewpoint, and try to describe fluid motion, that the system turns out to, at least in the classical sense, to a fluid limit, and everything behaves as if they are fluid. And some of you may have heard from last year, things like tachyon matter and string fluid. And that's basically talking about that. And then hopefully I'll be able to get to some issues involving domain walls in this classical field theory, and probably mumble something about how we might be able to see closed string starting from this completely open string description. So let's start with this toy model, which I already mentioned, should be very insulting. So here it is. So the toy model I'm going to start with is a mechanics. Not only mechanics, it's completely free mechanics, but relativistic. So action, as you know very well, is this. X dot vector squared over C squared. So, as you know, this is equivalent of half mx dot square dt. This would be my starting point for Newtonian mechanics, and this is my starting point for the special relativistic mechanics. So let me do some trivial things with this action. And if I write down the Euler-Lagrange equation of motion for this action, of course, everybody can do this by setting variation of this equal to zero. I don't have any explicit x dependence, so everything just depends on velocity. And since I have a square root there, all I get is this expression, equal to zero. And we realize what this quantity is what we call momentum. So this is expressing law of inertia. There is something we can call momenta, and since there is no interaction whatsoever, that momenta is preserved in time. That's all this thing says. Now, that should be end of story ordinarily because we just realized there is an equivalent of law of inertia and there is a conserved momenta, and we can begin, say, including some interactions if we elevate this to field theory, for example. But let me remain with this and do something equally trivial. Let me reformulate this Lagrangian mechanics in terms of Hamiltonian mechanics. Okay, so it's a what we call canonical formulation. So with this definition of P, which we call conjugate momenta, let me define Hamiltonian. And in any mechanical system, it's defined this way. So we are doing Legendre transformation, and we extremize with respect to velocity, and we are trying to swap this velocity in favor of this momentum. That's what we do. So just cranking in the expression, and x star square, momenta, velocity, and this is nothing but mc square, square root, same expression. And of course, by lowering this, what I get is mc square 1 minus x star square over c square. Now, of course, point of doing Hamiltonian dynamics is to write everything in terms of canonical variable, by which I mean write everything in terms of momenta and x, and instead of using velocity and x. So I should express everything in terms of momenta and coordinate in the phase, which are variables in the phase space. And after a couple of lines of computation, we realize that this whole thing is mc square p square, which of course everybody knows here. Okay. And this is energy. Okay. So what this thing says is energy divided by c square squared, p divided by c square is mass square. Okay. So this is how we end up with this E equal mc squares, of course. Now, so why do I do this trivial thing? Let me take a limit where mass of my particle goes to zero. Okay? Now, in that case, the starting point, my Lagrangian vanishes identically. Okay? Of course, I would have done the same thing starting from here and find this equation of motion, express everything in terms of momenta, and then after that takes mass equal to zero, and then I would be not in any trouble. But of course, if somebody gave me a Lagrangian of this type, a field theory of this type, I would have been very confused. So that's why I did this exercise. And in fact, even though Lagrangian vanishes completely, turns out the Hamiltonian is not going to vanish completely, because as you can see, once you express everything in terms of a canonical variable, the m does not sit in front of everything, and it is just one of the terms inside your square root. So what happens when I go to the massless limit of this relativistic free particle mechanics is just that one of the terms disappears. Okay? And so Hamiltonian is simply C times momentum square. There's nothing fancy there. Now, what's the equation of motion once you are given an expression like this? Well, we have the usual rule where in the canonical formulation, if you have a momenta, time evolution of momenta is given by Poisson bracket of Hamiltonian with coordinate like this. But of course, since this is free theory, there is no x dependence, and this is zero, and this is again the law of inertia we discovered earlier. Okay. And then we should ask, what is the velocity in this case? Well, this should be given by del H, del P. Okay. Now, with this, you will see that it's almost linear in P. It's a P square, but you take a square root. So what this expression is going to be is C time, just because I have that, P size of it, okay? Which is a unit vector. Okay? So this again says, express what we already know. If you have a massless particle which moves according to free relativistic law, that particle has to propagate at the speed of light, and direction is arbitrary. So this is all there is in this trivial mechanics. The point I try to make here is that when you have a vanishing Lagrangian like that, it might be, good thing might be that you use this canonical formulation and you try to write things in terms of somewhat different formulation. So far, this trivial example involved mechanics. Now we should ask, what happens if you have a situation like this in field theory? Okay, so we have a here example of mechanics, and suppose we have example of field theory. For example, I can think of a simple thing like free scalar field in some dimension, dxd, action, say something small, multiplying half gradient phi squared, half m phi squared. And I can ask what happens if I take epsilon to zero, okay? Well, here you can see that things are, again, somewhat trivial, because what we can do is define this epsilon multiplied by phi as another scalar field chi. And once I do this, then this disappears and this just gets in there. And this is perfectly sensible free field theory. So nothing funny happens in this case. Now, on the other hand, suppose you have an interaction term, say lambda pi to the fourth, and again, everything multiplied by epsilon squared. And if I do exactly the same substitution like this, this again disappears. This become chi. This become chi. This become chi. But divided by epsilon squared, because this has 4 powers of phi, while this has only 2 powers of phi. So in this case, when the whole thing involved some interactions, okay, this business of vanishing Lagrangian, in this case, translate to the limit where I have very, very strong interactions. Okay? So depending on exactly what form of Lagrangian you started with, you could end up with very different physics. Okay, so with this sort of trivial observation in mind, let us look at the Lagrangian we are going to study. So the Lagrangian we are going to study is supposed to be an approximate effective Lagrangian of a system where you have some unstable lump of energy. And one way of visualizing this is to consider a system of pair of D-brains. Okay. And we are, of course, going to take the distance between D-brain to zero. However, if these two are, say, DP-brain and DP-brain, okay, this would be describing a pair of stable solitonic configuration in type 2, some type 2 string theory. But one of the things we can do is flip orientation of one of the brain, so that if this is orientation of one brain, let the other brain have a different orientation like this. And accordingly, charge of this object, say Q, and charge of this object, Q tilde, will not be the same. And in fact, the sum of the two charges will be zero in such a situation. Okay? And since, although the initial D-brains are each some supersymmetric object whose existence is protected by long-range field and conserved charge, if you have a situation like this where you have Q and Q tilde whose sign is opposite, this is not going to be protected by anything, nothing topological or no conservation law or long range field, because long range field of this will be completely cancelled by long range field of this guy. Okay? Now in such situation, the interesting thing about this system is that instability associated with this intuition we have having this oppositely charged object can be realized at the level of open string, as Ashok convincingly showed us time and again last few years. And there are open string mode like this, and there are open string mode like this. Well, the low energy mode coming out of this part of effective action is usual in the sense that it has usual U1 gauge multiplet with 16 supersymmetry, and so does this guy. Let me call it A tilde mu. Now, the interesting point is that when you quantize this open string, which connect D-brain and anti-D-brain, the GSO projection that comes with this is exactly the opposite of this. Now let me remind you how these things came about. These things came about because you have, with this sort of boundary condition, you have a ground state which is tachyonic, say minus half. Now on top of that, you excite fermions like this, half mode, which has m squared zero and etc. Okay, in an NS sector. And what happens is GSO projection kill this guy away, and the next one, and next one, etc. In such a way that the lowest line excitation is massless and essentially gives you a vector multiplet. For this guy, however, exactly the same sort of construction comes about. However, the GSO projection for DD bar open string is opposite of what you would have. For this guy, you end up keeping this and getting rid of this and end up keeping this. Okay? Well, so we could start with this configuration and ask about low energy dynamics involving A tilde, A, and the tachyon coming from this guy. Okay? Well, even this is far complicated, and there is no compelling action, effective action involving this system. And turns out we can make further simplification of the system by dividing the whole system by some G2 action. Which is left moving fermion number. And this effectively maps this to the other 2A theory, type 2 theory. So for example, suppose this 2A theory with P even, okay, On the other side, this maps to type 2B theory. Of course, P remains even because I didn't do anything to the brain. However, we know that in type 2B theory, the stable brains are P odd ones. So like D1 string, D3 brain, etc. Okay? So we already know that there is no such a thing, such a stable object in type 2B theory. But that's okay because the system we started with is completely unstable system. It's some unstable classical solution in type 2B theory. Okay? Now what this minus 1 to the FL does for you is put minus sign whenever you see a left moving fermion. Okay? So what that means is, for example, Ramon RR sector tensor field flip sign, and since these D-brains carries charge with respect to RR tensor field, what it means is it flips D-brain to anti-D-brains and vice versa. Okay? So effect of this minus 1 to the FL is basically interchange these two. Okay? So what at the end of the day, one linear combination of this A tilde and A will survive under this projection. And of this string, of course, there are two orientations, D to D bar and D bar to D2. And there will be one linear combination of this open string will survive the projection. So at the end of the day, if I construct this classical solution on type 2B theory, what will happen is if I quantize open string of this, this could come from either one linear combination of this and this, or one linear combination of this and this. So at the end of the day, this open string on this side is like open string without GSO projection. Okay? So that means I will have one real tachyon, and I have a vector multiplet. Of course, the vector multiplet will have not only gauge field on the world volume, but transverse scalars, and from Ramon-Ramon sector, pair of fermion of 16. Okay? Pardon me?
No charged.
There is no charged fermions under this. There are only dipoles because open string goes like this in some sense, but there is no charge. In order to have a charge, I should have something like this. So there will be no small such excitation. So, well, then question is exactly what is the low energy effective action of this. In this talk, I don't think I can justify that in any, I mean, justify the action I'm going to introduce, whether I'm going to rely on Ashok Sen's intuition, and hopefully he will say something about that this course, in his course. No? No, he doesn't say. Well, I'll just give you lots of references and you go figure out yourself. So anyway, with this basic information, let me just propose one particular form of effective action. And in some sense, my prejudice for it has something to do with, more to do with convenience than some stringy justification. So let me write down the effective action. And since I'm going to do completely classical analysis, as I promised, I don't need to bother about these fermions. So I'm going to just ignore these fermions altogether. So in essence, I'm going to consider field theory where there is a tachyon with some potential associated with it and Mesley's gauge field on world volume. So mu is from 0 to p for unstable DP brain. And there will be some XIs, which are associated with the position of this D brain. So this I will run from P plus 1 to D minus 1. And D would be typically 10 for me, because I'm doing type 2 theories. Okay? So let me just write down effective action and observe some properties of it before we plunge into any computation. So I have a tachyon potential, and as you may have seen many times last few years, the tachyon potential is unusual in the sense that it multiplies everything. So instead of having t square plus or minus v of t, you have potential multiplying the kinetic term. So I have determinant of p plus 1 by p plus 1 matrix. So g mu nu is the so actually let me just write it at time mu, because I'm going to consider flat case anyway. And in fact, the thing that goes in there is the induced metric. So I need to have this information about the position of my brain. So if I have excitation in X, the whole thing will behave as if it is the induced metric. And since I have a gauge field and I have a D brain, that I would incorporate in terms of this field strength term like this. Now, so far, I haven't written anything about the tachyon kinetic term. And this is probably the least justified part of this effective action, but I'm going to put this particular form anyway. So let me put T like this. Some of the things I'm going to discuss during this lecture will depend crucially on having this form of kinetic term. Some of the things is not going to be dependent on this. Let me try to distinguish, you know, which is which as we go along. Okay. Well, then there is a terms like it's a topological terms. It's in Ashok's notation. This is some differential form instead of in terms of tachyon. And you have gauge field, two form coming in like this, and sum over C Ramong field. So this basically tells me how this unstable D brain couples with the space-time Ramong long range field. And of course I need to select a P minus one form to evaluate, T plus one form to evaluate on world volume. And in fact, I forgot one crucial piece here, because it simply follows from the open string, one of the open string gauge invariants. So you realize that the Nebel-Schwarz 2 form has a gauge invariance which force you to have this combination. Okay. Now, although this may look a little bit strange, you shouldn't be really surprised by this, because this toy model I mentioned initially has a form like mc squared square root the square c square. And in fact, this is exact analog of this, because as you can see, this is really coming from some determinant like this in 0 plus 1 dimension. And this is a mass of whatever particle I'm looking at. On the other hand, in this system, I have some unstable object which has some mass density or tension density associated with it. But at the end of the day, when everything disappears, when this solitonic object disappears through radiation, there should be no tension left here. So it's like getting rid of your mass. And just like I would take this term to zero when I get rid of, when I try to get rid of mass of this guy. I should be able to take this guy to zero, this potential. Okay? So in some sense, this is not a very strange thing to do. And then for the form of potential, the precise form of the potential is not going to matter very much, other than the fact that it vanishes somewhere. So in fact, I'm going to take a runaway potential like this. So this is t direction. Vt has some maximum here at t equals 0. And this height of this, it has to be, of course, tension of my unstable dp. And at some point, the tachyon will get will destabilize the system and begin to roll down. And if you wait sufficiently long amount of time, the tension has to disappear, which is a statement that potential approaches zero somewhere. And in this talk, I'm going to use a runaway potential like this, although the precise form will not matter much. Now, unlike the point particle action I just wrote, this action has a lot more information than dynamics because of this coupling to space-time Ramong-Ramong long-range field and Nubeshwar's field. For example, the whole thing has to be coupled to space-time Lagrangian. So one of the things you would see is space-time part of action and dx d, which has things like, for example, c rr squared, right? And what this tells me is that if I look at the equation of motion of this rr tensor field, you will have del square c rr coming from here. But you have extra terms coming from here because you have some expression that is linear with respect to Ramong-Ramong tensor field. So you have, by bearing this expression with respect to CRR, you will have some extra terms on the other side. So delta function that localizes things on world volume, just because this action, piece of action, is integral over world volume, and may be thought of as space-time integration with delta function localizing things on world volume and expression like this. Which, with respect to things on my world volume, for example, I could have some p plus 1 from part. So what this tells me is, if I have a various non-trivial configuration involving gradient of tachyon and or gauge field on this volume, that will generate a charge with respect to this long-range space-time field. So therefore, this effective Lagrangian has not only information about the unstable DP brain, but information about, say, stable object that carries charge with respect to the space-time Ramong-Ramong field. Okay. And just to make this observation complete, let me also observe that there is a B-minu field, and as you know, B-minu field is the long-range field that carries fundamental string charge, or rather, fundamental string charge carry long-range field associated with this B-minu. So by similar argument, the variation of the action here with respect to B-minu is going to generate fundamental string charge in the space-time. And in fact, latter part of today's lecture and tomorrow's lecture will be primarily about classical dynamics that involves this object, that is, whatever comes out of bearing this action with respect to this beam in U. Okay? I'm sorry? Oh, I'm doing, as of the background, I'm doing just completely flat background without any dilaton turned on. Okay?
So these brains do not excite the non-rational.
Say that again?
These brains do not excite the non-rational. They influence the metric.
Right. I'm really doing this in the limit where the coupling is very, very small, and we basically ignore the back reaction on the geometry. Of course, once you include the next level in open string, I should be able to include those. But at this level, I'm doing this without considering any back reaction.
So if you replace the eta mu of the background by a general background,
right,
at that point you have to include the dilaton as well.
I guess so. I mean,
if you do minus pi in front of the whole atom, if you want to couple the dilaton also, you just multiply.
Right. So this thing has, of course, tension. So there is a factor of exponential minus phi. Although in this story, this is taken as some small constant or large constant, I should say. Okay. And but as far as doing this dynamics, suppose I turned on this and include G there, okay? It's not going to actually change most of the story I'm going to tell you about, because at least until the last lecture, I'm going to take the limit, going to take a look at the state where this potential actually vanishes. So whether I have this or not, in the background, doesn't seem to matter that much. Okay, so let me take another simplification and just specialize just for the purpose of this particular lecture and look at the case of D2 brain, unstable D2 brain. Let's see, where do I start? Probably I should do it here. So let's take the example of unstable D2 and make things even more simple by freezing Xi to zero, which means I'm not going to allow any fluctuation of this unstable D brain. You know, it's unstable soliton, so it's probably not a bad idea to do so. And I'm going to treat tachyon as if it is one of the parameters. So that means I'm going to ignore this kinetic term as well as this kinetic term. Okay? So this will be taken as expectation and let it go away to vacuum at infinity, because I'm looking at the runaway potential. In that case, I can substitute V of t as a number, lambda, which I'm going to take to be zero at the end of the day. And then I can ask, is there some non-trivial dynamics in this theory? Again, let me go back to the case of mechanics. Like this. And initially, I took the limit where this quantity, this constant, is taken zero, and I ask whether there is something non-trivial. And there was, in some sense, something non-trivial, where there is something that propagates. And I'm going to ask exactly the same question in this particular case. So since this is D2, the world volume action would involve, say, 2 plus 1 dimensional integral of Lagrange density. I have lambda taking the place of this number, which will go to zero. And I have a determinant, eta mu nu plus f mu nu. And again, I'm going to flat background, so my b would be identically zero, g would be eta, and this factor doesn't matter. Okay. So since we are in three dimension, this is something very simple. It's only quadratic. This metric in flat background would be 1, 1, 1, x, or direction 1 electric field, direction 2 electric field, magnetic field is like scalar on space, E1, E2, minus B. And you know how to take the determinant of this, and the determinant of the entire thing is 1 plus half F square, which is to say 1 minus E square plus B square. Okay? So is there something non-trivial going on when I take the limit where Lagrangian actually vanishes? Well, the lesson we learned at the beginning is try that something might happen if I go to Lagrangian, from Lagrangian formulation to Hamiltonian formulation. So let me compute the conjugate momenta. Which is del E, which is lambda E 1 minus E square plus B square. Okay. Now, then Hamiltonian, as before, is this. So actually I should say AI dot. And Hamiltonian is AI pi I dot minus L, which I can write it as AI EI plus A zero, I'm sorry, what is it? Pi I round I A zero, just from the definition of my electric field, minus L, okay? Now these two combined gives lambda 1 plus B squared 1 plus B squared minus E squared, just because this. And the other expression, I can do a partial integration to get me there, get me this. And of course, you realize that this is nothing but Gauss constraint. Okay. Now, since I'm looking at the Hamiltonian, I better write this in terms of canonical variable. That means I need to get rid of E in favor of conjugate momentum. And once I do this, this is just a simple exercise that takes you about half page. Entire thing square rooted. And A0 round I pi I. Okay? So nothing fancy there. So again, as in the free particle mechanics, when I take the limit where Lagrangian vanishes, nothing much happens here except one of the terms, one of the additive terms goes to zero. So in the mechanics case, all I had was just P square square rooted. Here, because this is a field theory, things are a little bit more complicated, and I have terms like this, multiplying P square, essentially. Okay, so any question up to this point? So let us ask, what are the conserved quantities in this classical field theories? Well, first of all, we can ask, what are physical electric fields? I mean, if the Lagrangian we started were usual quadratic type, you are accustomed to Maxwell theory, electric field is just this. EI, which are F0I. Okay? When you have nonlinear Lagrangian like this, this is not true, because suppose you have some particle coupled to your gauge field minimally like this, and ask what effect this particle has, whose current I wrote as a J mu, on this electric field. Okay? If you have some constant density of, say, unmoving static distribution of charge density like this, this would be the term. Okay? So looking at A naught dependence here, we realize that equation of motion contain term like this. So in the usual counterpart of this in Maxwell's theory is of course this, and this is what we understand as the Gauss law. So in nonlinear Lagrangian like this, what takes the role of electric field is not E, but rather pi. Okay? So this is one important observation. And in particular, this means this flux pi given by this conjugate momentum pi is the one that is going to be conserved. So there is no conservation law associated with electric field, but rather this. So I'm going to actually call this electric field with this understanding. So whenever I say electric field, I refer to this rather than the F0i. Okay. Okay, so let me look at that Hamiltonian again. So I have Hamiltonian, apart from the Gauss constraint, Hamiltonian is square rooted form. And once I take the limit where lambda is zero strictly, it takes simple form like this. Okay? Now, there's one more thing we need to understand, which is conserved momentum. Because I'm doing some field theory in 2 plus 1 dimensional flat background, there is of course conserved energy, which is nothing but this guy, integration of this over space, but there will be conserved momentum because there is translational invariance. And if you recall how we compute the net charge associated with the conserved momenta, you will remember that the conserved momenta will go like this. So just round J AI. On the other hand, I could put this extra guy because this is nothing but pi I, and adding this term will not matter much because this really is, this adding this extra piece is like adding a total derivative piece. So the conserved momenta at the end of the day is going to be simply F J I pi J, where these are spatial indices. So this I runs 1 to 2. And in fact, if I were doing DP brain, this would run from 1 to P. Okay? I think I probably screw up sign here. There should be actually minus sign, but that's really, in some sense, convention. Now, I erased this matrix. So this was eta plus F equal E1, E2, P, E1 minus E2 minus B. And the Fij I was referring to is just this part. So Fij in 2 plus 1 dimension is, of course, something like epsilon ij with some magnetic field B. So this, in case of this 2 plus 1 dimensional case, is nothing but B epsilon I epsilon J I pi I. Okay? So epsilon J I B times pi I. Okay? So here, this can be written as square root pi square and P square, where this is conserved momentum density. So whenever we have non-trivial magnetic field, that always induces some motion, some physical motion in the system, which is very unusual. So since we identify this additional piece associated with the magnetic field as physical momentum, we could consider, by turning this off completely, most general static configuration. So whenever I have some non-trivial number here, that means system is actually moving. So I could, if I want to consider system without any motion, any physical motion, I need to turn this off. Which means if I have a static, this is all there is in my energy. The flux, the absolute value of your flux is the energy density I'm looking at. Okay. Now, I seem to have spent too much time on introduction. Let me, in the remaining 5 minutes, try to do something slightly different. Again, same D2 system, but try to formulate in somewhat different way, and all of this will be reflected in tomorrow's computation. Let's do another exercise where I rewrite this Lagrangian in terms of another classically equivalent Lagrangian. Okay, so let me forget about the Hamiltonian. In fact, since I don't have much time, I really should read this as an exercise, but let me try to describe what the exercise is. So I have two plus one dimensional Lagrangian, which has the form of minus lambda, one plus, well, there is a trick of so-called dualization, some of which you should be familiar with. And the prescription goes like this. We sort of try to cook up a different Lagrangian, where we introduce in place of F, which is really D of A, we try to introduce a two-form G squared, but G is not constrained in any way like this, but rather try to impose this F equal, this is Bianchi, in terms of Lagrange multiplier. So instead of imposing that, I can put a term like this, where phi is some unconstrained real scalar field. Okay. Now, I can get there simply by integrating over phi, because this is linear in phi, so this is just Lagrange multiplier field. So if I use equation of motion of this guy, this imposes a constraint d is equal to zero, which means that G locally should be writable as dA. And once I use that, this is nothing but field strength of my gauge field A. And of course, I end up back in my usual Lagrangian. Okay? Now with this, there is an alternate thing we can do, where we try to integrate out this guy instead of this, which means up to total derivative, this term is something like this, okay? And I'm going to leave this as an exercise and just write down the answer. If I integrate over G instead of integrating over phi, by which I simply mean using classical equation of motion, because it's not quadratic, the two things are not, but we are doing classical physics, so just use equation of motion. So there G equal to zero. And everything should be writable in terms of phi. And then you end up using this dual Lagrangian and up to factor of 2 depending on the definition and probably some errors I may have made. Like this. So again, in the limit where you take lambda equal to 0, the Lagrangian of this is this funny one. Again, you see this funny square root structure. Okay? And the relationship between the two is such that, for example, phi dot round phi square, phi dot square is magnetic field. Okay? And pi I is epsilon I j round j pi. Okay? So, I could start looking at this field theory either from this side, this dual Lagrangian, or from this Hamiltonian. The conclusion should be same. The conclusion about this particular system is that there is no pressure anywhere here. So if I consider a case where there is no physical momentum and everything is static and sitting there nicely, the energy is just given by the total flux if it doesn't change the direction. So static solution of this configuration is where fluxes goes along one direction like this. But its distribution is completely arbitrary. It is, as long as you align all the fluxes along one direction, there is nothing that prevents them to either clumping up to one place or disperse completely into the space. So this configuration, for example, costs exactly same energy as this guy, as long as number of lines here and number of total lines here are the same. So the energy here is just given by counting of fluxes as long as they are straight. Of course, there is some pressure in the sense that if I try to bend these fluxes like this, for example, this is not a stable situation because this is absolute, it's not just absolute value, it's what you square and take square root. And given a particular length here, with the same, say, 1 inch, there are more length of your flux line here, and this costs more energy. And this just says that this is some tensionful string-like object. Okay, so that's probably a place I should stop today. And this is just what I just tried to describe today is just a particular case of this, but all of this analysis can be extended to arbitrary dimension, and in fact, with including all the transverse colors and even tachyon dynamics, and can be done analytically all the way. And that's what I'll try to do tomorrow. And in particular, the goal of tomorrow would be getting to this number of the flux string, and what I'm saying is that we can squeeze this flux line into a thin bundle of fluxes, and you can ask what's the low energy dynamics of that particular configuration where all flux lines are squeezed into thin tube. Turns out the equation of motion of that tube is exactly Nambu-Goto equation of motion. So it behaves exactly like relativistic string with some tension. So that would be goal of next lecture. Thank you. Any questions? No? Pardon me? It changes completely. When lambda is not zero, if lambda was some finite number, and you can then expand the Lagrangian I started in terms of small field strengths. And of course, the leading behavior there is just Maxwell theory. So fluxes will feel pressure. So if you try to squeeze flux nearby, they try to repel. So that sort of generic behavior you are going to see. I'm going to say something about the case where lambda or potential is not identically zero. And when, I mean, that involves, say, for example, domain walls in this dynamics. Domain walls, they interpolate, say, left vacua of this tachyon to the right vacua of tachyon. And in that case, some of the behavior I described today is going to be modified. It's a no idea. I mean, it's something. It's not really computed. I mean, it is computed in, say, for example, BSFT approach. Okay, and there it essentially has same form as the potential form. But I mean, the reason I try to not to say anything about stringy justification of this is whatever justification you have is probably useful only in some regime, especially near the top of potential. So once you get down to the bottom of potential, it's very unlikely that you will have some stringy justification with the present day, you know, the technique with string theory. So all of this we try to do without any specific form of the potential or these unknown quantities, and try to extract something that's sort of universal within that class of Lagrangian. Yes, I'm sure there is. We are assuming completely trivial topology in the background, and one of the global issues that might be important is, for example, periodicity of this phi. This is a scala which is dual to some compact U1 gauge field, and that should translate to the fact that phi itself is actually a periodic variable. So in fact, I didn't get there, but with the normalization where magnetic field is quantized into pi, say, total flux quantized to pi, I think phi should be quantized in unit, for example. And that might play an interesting role later. But sort of all those issues are sort of ignored in this classical field theory approach, of course. Actually, since you mentioned it, you know, we can think about domain wall configuration where the interpolation between phi equals zero and phi equals unit, and that essentially behaves like a unit fundamental string on this original picture, because it has some finite quantized amount of string flux or electric flux. One reason is that it's simpler that way, because you get rid of half of the gauge field. For example, the simple form of Lagrangian I propose works with real T, and if I stayed in the original picture where I didn't mode out anything, there would be complex T, and one combination of gauge field would couple that. I mean, would be coupled to this complex T minimally. And there are some additional issues associated with that, and actually that's where Ashok started several years ago. I mean, that particular coupling. But that sector is somewhat better understood than this sector we are looking at, so it's sort of matter of simplicity. Of course, I could have started with boundary state associated with this unstable brain and just forget about this DD bar business. but I thought this would be a better way of motivating the configuration.
So is there some dead object?
Yeah, there is a solution to classical tree-level closed string that's supposed to represent this unstable D-brain as a classical solution. So, are you done, Moshe?
Yeah. So, we complement the problem.